incident where Srila Prabhupada had that heart attack, and his doctor told him that he should take a morning walk every day. He wasn't doing that before that time. So he took that also as an instruction. So Srila Prabhupada would take instructions from seemingly ordinary people. Here it is, a librarian and his doctor. As a dependent servant constantly meditating on the desires of his transcendental master and seeking his guidance, Bhaktivedanta Swami felt his spiritual master's reciprocal blessings and personal presence. More and more he was feeling confidential contact with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and now he was feeling an inspiration to write books. Prabhupada said other places that he has never felt separate from his spiritual master. He felt always in contact. Well, that's a lesson for us also, that, past and present, that the words of the spiritual master and the instructions of the spiritual master are more important than his personal presence. Although that's certainly relishable to have that. Actually, the main thing is his instructions, to follow that and his guidance through those instructions. He considered Srimad Bhagavatam, because it was the most important and authoritative Vaishnava literature. This is to write books. Although Bhagavad Gita was the essence of all Vedic knowledge, presented in a brief ABC fashion, Srimad Bhagavatam was elaborate. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had both written Bengali commentaries on the Bhagavatam. In fact, most of the great Vaishnavacharyas of the past had commented on Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya himself had recommended Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Vedic literature. An English translation and commentary for this book could one day change the hearts of the entire world. And if he could publish even a few books, his preaching would be enhanced. He could go abroad with confidence and not appear empty-handed. One day, Gaurachand Goswami, proprietor of the Radha-Damodar temple, approached Bhaktivedanta Swami, invited him to come live at the Radha-Damodar temple. Being the eternal home of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, it would be more suitable for his writing and translating. We remember meeting Gaurachand Goswami when Srila Prabhupada brought all his disciples back to Vrindavan. They had a few talks. Well, in fact, on his arrival at Radha-Damodar temple, Gaurachand Goswami garlanded Srila Prabhupada. It's also in one of our films. And there's also some shots of him speaking with him. He had never stopped his regular visits there to Radha-Damodar temple, and he always felt inspired in the presence of the samadhi tombs of the great leaders of Lord Chaitanya's movement, Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami. But when he went to look at the two available rooms, he found them in poor repair. They had not been maintained or lived in for many years. Not wanting to miss the opportunity, however, Bhaktivedanta Swami agreed to take the rooms at 5 rupees per month. He estimated that for a little more than 500 rupees, he could have electricity installed and extensive repairs made. And when it was finished, he could move in. When we went into those rooms, Srila Prabhupada opened them up after quite a few years. And we noticed one thing on the wall. There was a little handwritten note of Srila Prabhupada's, and he added up all the electricity bills for each month, down to the pice. And that was interesting. He, kept track of everything he spent very carefully. we remember also in Juhu, Mother Malati came in to get his laundry. So she took it away, and then a few minutes later, Srila Prabhupada called her. And he said, "Bring my kurta." So she brought his kurta back, and he pulled out a 1 rupee note and said, sent it back. He's conscious of everything he spent. And he also said that we can spend lakhs and lakhs of rupees for Krishna, but we should not spend one paisa on our own sense gratification. Bhaktivedanta Swami saw the invitation as auspicious, and living there would complement his new project of presenting Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Of all Vrindavan's temples, Radha Damodar had the largest collection of original writings by the 6 Goswamis and their followers. More than 2,000 separate manuscripts, many of them 300, even some 400 years old. Bhaktivedanta Swami looked forward to residing there someday and serving in the company of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami. For now, he would remain at the Bhakti Gopalaji temple, and with whatever money he could collect, he would gradually repair the rooms. Srila Prabhupada was very interested in preserving these manuscripts. In 1972, he had contact with Lalit Prasad, who was the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was living in Birnagar, which is maybe a couple of hours from Mayapur. And he asked me to go there. Srila Prabhupada asked me to go and stay there, and because Lalit Prasad had offered to show us the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because he had his library there in Birnagar. So I went there and stayed 9 days. I took my camera and lots of film and filmed page by page the books that he gave me. And those are with the BBT even today. But he had a lot more, and unfortunately I didn't get to go back and photograph more, but I think devotees have since accessed those books. And at the time I was there, which was 1972, many of them were in very bad condition, being eaten by insects and holes in them and so forth. So we hope that everything that was there has been preserved. It was an important maxim of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's that a preacher should go to the cities and not remain in the seclusion of a holy place. So in that spirit, Bhaktivedanta Swami continued commuting to Delhi, even though to him it was a hell, and even though he had no fixed residence there. Often he was taken in by businessmen who felt obliged on the basis of Indian culture. A good man, if he wanted to be favored by God, should accommodate the sadhus and give them meals and a place to stay. But the vision of such pious men was a sentimental Hinduism, and their receptions were artificial. They could not really appreciate Bhaktivedanta Swami's work, and Bhaktivedanta Swami was not of a mind to impose himself upon such hosts. So their devotees were with Srila Prabhupada on a train. They were going, I believe, to Amritsar. They were going through Delhi, anyway. I'm not sure of the destination. But on the train was one man who was getting off in Delhi. And he offered that to help the devotees try to find a temple, establish a temple in Delhi. So this transpired in a very short time in the Delhi train station while they were waiting to go on to the next station. So Srila Prabhupada agreed that devotees should get down. He accepted the man's invitation and asked the Yamuna Devi, her husband Gurudas, and I think 2 or 3 others. So immediately they just got down with very few minutes notice, and the train went on. So Srila Prabhupada asked them to establish a center in Delhi. So it was a big struggle, but they managed to get something, and also they arranged for the first very large Delhi Pandal program at the LIC grounds, which was a very big, prestigious spot in Delhi. Then he spoke with Mr. Hitsaran Sharma, manager of the Radha Press. In the past, Mr. Sharma had printed flyers and stationery for the League of Devotees, and Bhaktivedanta Swami had stayed in Mr. Sharma's house on occasion. Mr. Sharma introduced Bhaktivedanta Swami to Pandit Sri Krishna Sharma, a caste Brahmin and active religionist, secretary to the century-old Delhi Religious Society, Sri Naval Prem Sabha. Out of sympathy for Bhaktivedanta Swami's literary labors, Krishna Pandit gave him a room in his Radhakrishna temple in the Chippewada neighborhood of Old Delhi. Now Bhaktivedanta Swami would have a permanent office in Delhi. I just heard recently that that temple was donated. Did you hear anything like that? Train from Mathura would arrive at the Old Delhi station near Chandi Chowk, the broad avenue down which poured a river of workday traffic. Rickshaws, bicycle riders, sometimes a dozen abreast, autos in lesser numbers, men running on foot pulling heavy carts, and beasts of burden, donkeys, oxen, and occasional camel or elephant, carrying heavy loads and being driven by men with whips in their hands. From the intensely busy Chandi Chowk, Bhaktivedanta Swami would take a short walk to Chippewada past the Red Fort, keeping the Gauri Shankara temple on his left, then proceeding along a side street past the large imposing Jama Mosque. Near Chippewada, the streets would become narrow. Chippewada had been a Muslim neighborhood until the India-Pakistan partition of 1947, when thousands of Punjabi Hindus had settled there. Chippewada was part of a mixed Hindu-Muslim neighborhood, so crowded with people that cars were not allowed to enter the streets. Only ox carts and rickshaws could penetrate the narrow, crowded lanes. And in some areas, the lanes were planted with iron posts to keep rickshaws out. Even a bicycle rider would create havoc amongst the densely packed crowd of shoppers and workers who moved along the streets and lanes. The temple, with its resident families, retained some of the tenement atmosphere of the neighborhood. Although the temple room was dark, the Radhakrishna deities on the altar were well illuminated. Radharani was the color of cream, and Krishna was black marble and stood about 2 feet tall. He was decorated with dots of fresh sandalwood pulp and a mask of yellow sandalwood on his forehead. Both deities were dressed in silk garments. On the second floor, just above the deity room, was the guest room, Bhaktivedanta Swami's room. Its cement walls and floor were completely bare. Protruding up from the floor was a 3-foot-high concrete pyramid with a spire, indicating that deities were directly beneath. Bhaktivedanta Swami soon found that his room was not secluded, but was side by side with other residential rooms. Outside the door, a metal grating smaller than in the Bamshi Gopala temple in Keshavji Math revealed the small temple courtyard below. From the roof, hardly a single tree could be seen. The view was of tenement rooftops so tightly crowded together that it seemed one could walk from roof to roof all the way to the colossal Jama Masjid. The mosque's three large domes, surrounded by taller minarets, rose high above the ordinary buildings, attracting flocks of pigeons, which perched upon the domes or flew in, wheeling patterns in the sky. Krishna Pandit, dressed in a black lightweight cotton coat, the kind made internationally recognizable by Pandit Nehru, and he had the Nehru hat also. He spoke good English and was garrulous. Anybody know what that means? G-A-R-R-U-L-O-U-S. Talkative? He was well known and respected within the neighborhood. He saw Bhaktivedanta Swami as God sent, a sadhu for him to take care of, and thus prove once again the piety of Hindu culture. He found his new guest likable, a simple, gentle, gracious, and accomplished Vaishnava scholar. Krishna Pandit said he understood the importance of Bhaktivedanta Swami's Sanatan Dharma mission and his need for a Delhi office, and he vowed to supply his guest with whatever he required. Although Bhaktivedanta Swami was reluctant to ask for anything for himself, Krishna Pandit brought in the sitting mat and a low table, placing them before the pyramid, and he also brought a mattress. He showed Bhaktivedanta Swami how to operate the room's single light. A bulb and metal shade hung from a cord that could be raised or lowered by hand. He brought a picture of Radha Krishna that had been given to his guru by the Maharaj of Jaipur and set it within a niche in the wall. Relishing that Bhaktivedanta Swami could gaze upon it with the eyes of a true devotee. This reminds me of the program that Srila Prabhupada had in Jaipur. He was invited to Jaipur by the, gosh, forget her name, do you remember? Gayatri Devi. And she was the princess? The queen, right. Okay, so so it speaks here of the Maharaj of Jaipur. That would be her husband, the son of Gayatri Devi. Anyway, she invited Srila Prabhupada and all the devotees to stay there, and it was a very, very wonderful time to be near the Radha Govindaji temple. In Srila Prabhupada, we had a Pandal program, and actually two ladies organized it. Kaushalya, Prabhupada's disciples, Kaushalya Devi and another lady, not Yamuna. Forget her name. Anyway, they were very sincere, but they were very, very young girls, and things weren't quite properly arranged. So Srila Prabhupada was not so pleased when he arrived in Jaipur, but he first gave them a mild chastisement and then forgave them. They were very sincere. And I remember Srila Prabhupada singing the Brahma Samhita every night at the Pandal program. It would echo throughout the whole palace, and palace grounds, very, very beautiful. And those deities at that Pandal were Radha Govinda. Those deities were sent to New York. Those are the present Radha Govinda deities. So Srila Prabhupada stepped when he would have deities at any Pandal, there were generally new deities, so they were considered installed. just by being present at that at the pandal. That was the case in Jaipur and also Delhi, when the deities that eventually went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, and what other? The deities from Australia, I believe, were in Cross Maidan. I think they went to Sydney, Australia. Right. Yeah, we're actually in living in that first apartment building on it was called Akash Ganga, overlooking the ocean. That was our first temple, and then we moved to Juhu. Those deities arrived at the temple in two large crates in that at that apartment. And the owner of the apartment building, he was there when the deities arrived and were taken off the truck. He wouldn't allow the deities to go up because he said that we were smuggling in drugs. He could hear the singing and dancing, the ecstasy of the devotees every day. He thought it was just drug-induced, so he demanded that we open up the crates and he inspected before they went up. So we opened up one crate, and it was Radharani. So we all paid obeisances immediately, and then he felt quite foolish, actually, and said, "You can take everything off." Yeah, the many Indians, although everyone was curious, some were very suspicious. Even the government accused us of being CIA. That means Central Intelligence Agency spies. So they actually, the rumor has it, I'm not sure today if this is true, but that the Indian government planted one devotee to come and join and spy on us. One name was given. I know that person, but I'm not sure. But they were. It came up in Parliament. It was discussed in Parliament that we were possibly CIA. Also suspect.
Which government funded CIA?
American government. Central Intelligence Agency is the intelligence agency of America. Infamous body. They would do underground, undercover work all over the world, including plotting assassinations and, of course, all sorts of nasty stuff. Krishna Pandit said he understood the importance of Bhaktivedanta Swami. Bhaktivedanta Swami had wanted a secure place for writing books before going to the West, and Lord Krishna had provided it. Now he could begin work either in Vrindavan or in Delhi. Almost immediately he began back to Godhead again, serializing book excerpts from his previous manuscripts, while at the same time beginning Srimad Bhagavatam. When Krishna Pandit learned of his guest's lone struggles to produce Back to Godhead, he volunteered to help with some of the business aspects of the publication. Bhaktivedanta Swami was indeed gratified by Krishna Pandit's sincere help, and in appreciation he gave him an addition to his name, Hari Bhaktanu Das, one who serves the Lord's devotee. After 6 months in Chippewa, Bhaktivedanta Swami wrote an appreciation in the temple's guest book. Quote, "I am pleased to write herein that I have come to Delhi from my HQ 1859 Keshigat, Vrindavan, UP, purely on spiritual mission to propagate the cult of devotional service of the Lord. and I am more pleased to mention herein that Sriman Krishna Sharma, Hari Bhaktanudas, has provided me a suitable room for my literary activities. I am publishing an English fortnightly magazine of the name Back to Godhead from this place, and the Nawal Prem Shabha, of which Sri Krishnaji is the honorary secretary, is arranging for my daily lectures on Srimad Bhagavat. Late Pandit Jyoti Prasad Sharma, father of Sri Krishnaji, was also known to me, and during his lifetime, whenever I used to come to Delhi, late Pandit Jyoti Prasadji would provide me with a residential place. His good son is also following in the footsteps of his noble father, and as secretary of the Nawal Prem Shabha, he is doing good service in propagating Ram Nam all over the city. In neat English script, Bhaktivedanta Swami went on to write, in his opinion, temples should be used solely for educating the public in spiritual values, and that it was his personal mission to organize temples for that service. Quote, temples are not meant for ordinary householders engaged simply in the matters of animal propensities. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Lord Deity, the predominator of the temple, can only be allowed to remain in the temple, otherwise not. Trying to compose Srimad Bhagavatam at Chippewada while surrounded by sometimes noisy families with their non-devotional domestic habits had impressed upon him the importance of not using a temple as an apartment house.
What time does Srimad Bhagavatam class go till? 8:30?
So there's a new section here. I think I'll stop at this time.
And do you have any questions? Comments? Yes. He was shaved up and he was with us. I don't think so. His name, anyway, I don't think so. But I'm not sure. He disappeared. Yeah. I'm not sure if anybody knows what happened or not. The early days were quite amazing. Again, I mentioned that everyone was curious. Some were proud, some were ashamed because they knew that they weren't following as closely as we were. And some took to Krishna consciousness just immediately. Some met Prabhupada and just surrendered on the spot. There's one devotee at Hare Krishna Land named Mr. Shetty. He was in construction, that was his business. He was totally devoted to Prabhupada. When the temple was demolished, he came in and overnight reconstructed it. Because if it was left demolished, there was chances that they would come and clear it, just clear everything out. And so that it was temporarily stopped. And I think the who was that big leader who helped us? He's still alive. He wasn't in politics. He was a bit kind of a maybe even a mafia character. Remember? No. Anyway, demolition was stopped, and then he came in, Mr. Shetty came in and rebuilt the temple overnight. There was also another family at Hare Krishna Land called, name was the Warriors, Mr. and Mrs. Warrior and their children. Children were quite small. So Mrs. Warrior was always taking in the devotees and feeding them and caring for them and giving them medicine. And Srila Prabhupada really appreciated that family. Unfortunately, the husband passed away after a couple of years, I think. Did you know them? Lawyers? Yeah. Very, very devoted family. So there weren't many like that, but they were always that type of devotee that came forth whenever Srila Prabhupada, wherever Srila Prabhupada went. And then, of course, in Fiji, when he came to Fiji, he met one devotee. Names here. Vasudeva. Vasudeva organized a greeting for Srila Prabhupada at the airport. He heard from his sister, who was in Australia, that Prabhupada was coming from Australia, stopping in Fiji for a change of planes or refueling or something, and then on, only stopping for, I think, less than an hour. So Vasudeva organized, he wasn't Vasudeva at the time, but he organized all his friends to receive Srila Prabhupada at the airport. So when Srila Prabhupada came, Vasudeva was very, very impressed and spoke with Srila Prabhupada at length. Prabhupada asked him, "Do you have a Radha Krishna temple here?" And he said, "No." Prabhupada said, "Please establish one." And when Prabhupada left, he touched Vasudeva's head, and Vasudeva just started weeping. And he was totally, moved to serve Srila Prabhupada. So that was his order, and he executed that order. We have the Krishna Kaliya temple today. So yeah. And there's that story in our DVD series that of Radha Govinda Swami meeting Srila Prabhupada. He didn't know who Srila Prabhupada was on the second meeting. Has everyone heard this story? And Radha Govinda Maharaj was in Chandigarh looking for Prabhupada, and he happened to come meet Prabhupada alone. And he asked Prabhupada, he didn't recognize him, he asked him, "Where is Bhaktivedanta Swami? Can you tell me?" And Prabhupada said, "Why do you want to meet Bhaktivedanta Swami?" And he said, "He is my guru." So Prabhupada said, "Why is he your guru?" And he said, Radha Govinda Swami said, because he says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. And then Prabhupada said, "No, he's not. Lord Chaitanya is not Krishna." So Radha Govinda Swami said, "Yes, he is." Prabhupada said, "No, he's not." So finally, Radha Govinda Swami said, "Just keep quiet." And then some disciples came and bowed down, and then he realized, this is Prabhupada. He was completely mortified. He said, "Please forgive me." And he also paid obeisances. So Prabhupada brought him in his room, and some disciples were there, and he said, this boy, he knows who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. He is Krishna himself." And Prabhupada said, "You chastised me. I like that." So, Krishna also has his pastimes with his friends who are joking and playing with him and chastising him. So this is pleasurable for the Supreme Lord also. There's a little idea of the pastimes of the Lord from this example. The mood. Anything else? I forget when that came in. It was around that time, early 70s. Yeah, Prabhupada never complained about that film. Do they show him in that film? I should. Yeah, I didn't think so. Devotees are, actors are in it. Yeah. Yeah. Should have probably. Prabhupada was asked about that, well, of course, we understand that in whatever way the mantra is chanted, even jokingly or even ridiculing, there's benefit. There's two articles written about Srila Prabhupada's visit to Chicago. One article was very critical, but it mentioned Hare Krishna many, many times. Another article was very favorable, but it hardly said Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada liked the unfavorable article better. So, yeah, the Maha Mantra is more potent than we realize. Lord Chaitanya's mercy is everywhere in the form of the Maha Mantra. Srila Prabhupada would be so happy to see his movement all over the world spreading like anything. And it's very, very wonderful to travel and see what's happening. I think of the Ukraine Festival. I've been going for about 6 years now. His Holiness Niranjana Swami started it in the 90s, late 90s. And in the beginning there were a few hundred devotees. At the last festival there were 6,000 devotees. And they rent this huge, huge tent. And they love to chant. They chant so loudly and enthusiastically. It's overwhelming. So, you know, maybe it's something to do with the... because that was part of Russia in the early days. In fact, we did one film called Krishna in Ukraine. And we went to that festival and filmed. We also did interviews with devotees who were persecuted under the Russian regime. And even one devotee who used to type Bhagavad Gita, and he would use multiple pieces of paper in the typewriter with carbon paper. And he would have to type very, very hard for the type to go all the way through to the multiple copies. And he said he used to type so hard that his fingers became bloody from typing. And he was personally tortured by the KGB. So that's an amazing history in itself, devotees in Russia. Now Prabhupada established that yatra. I was in Mumbai when Srila Prabhupada was leaving for Russia, and one devotee, Brahmananda Swami, said, "Prabhupada, you can't go to Russia now, it's the mango season." Srila Prabhupada's answer was, "Preaching in the snows of Russia is sweeter than any mango." He was so enthusiastic to go. And we know that he met two young people after he met the professor Kotovsky, who's become famous by Srila Prabhupada quoting him so often as saying that there's nothing after death, not believing in the soul. And after that meeting, there was maybe a day that went by, no, Prabhupada was just in his hotel. So Shyamasundara Prabhu went out to get some milk. He had to stand in line to get rice or milk. And he met two young people. One was a Russian boy and the other was an Indian boy. So they were curious and they asked Shyamasundara something. He was wearing dhoti, I believe. Maybe not. That was Russia. Anyway, they met and Shyamasundara invited them back, and Srila Prabhupada preached to them, especially to the Russian boy, and then gave him the single copy of the Bhagavad Gita that they had. So from that single book, Prabhupada's preaching, the whole Russian yatra developed. I remember sending films to Kirtiraj Prabhu to be taken into Russia and shown underground at different engagements that they had. It was all secret, very secretive. And there were devotees distributing, of course, in plain clothes, books that they would, you know, watch a person for a while in a public place, and then if they decided it was safe to approach them, they would approach them very quietly and speak very softly, And then they would have a book under their coat. And at one point they would open up their coat and show the book. And if they were interested, they would take a book. So one time a devotee was doing that, and he finally opened up and showed the book. And he was actually speaking to a devotee who also had a book under his coat. He said, "I'm doing the same thing." So. I never did. No. But he married Mandakini. She spent time in Russia. There was separation after that. He was sent to Siberia? I don't know. I don't know the timeline on that. I don't know the history. Really, a book should be written about that whole history. Even a film should be made. So, yes. I don't think so. Prabhupada mentioned him many, many times. Big professor, and doesn't know who he is or where he's going. Therefore, Prabhupada called the school slaughterhouses. You go there and hear from people who don't really have any knowledge. They have some material knowledge, but even some of that is just speculation. I went to UC Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and had a physics class by Edward Teller, who was the inventor of the H-bomb. And at that time, the understanding of the structure of the atom was different than it is today. So basically what I learned then wasn't knowledge, speculation. So you learn these things and regurgitate them on tests, and then it's basically useless. So big cheating game. So, but you know, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes, you know, of course we have devotees who have gone to school and are using that facility, are using that for preaching. There's Garuda Prabhu in America, who's the history of religion professor. He's doing a lot of preaching. And of course, Tamal Krishna Goswami got a degree. He was preaching. And Srila Prabhupada asked me, when I asked him whether I should get my master's degree in photography, because I'd started it and not finished it. All I had to do was my thesis. And his first question was, how long will it take? And I said, a few months. So Prabhupada said, you should try to get it. So I turned in the Hare Krishna People film as the thesis and a 30-page essay, and they wanted me to write more, a longer essay, more like 100 pages. So I just forgot about it, you know, doing other things, devotional service. And then 6 months later, I got a diploma in the mail. They finally gave me a degree with no other writing to, you know, necessary. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.